now. But we
Sure.
can still chit chat away whilst I go live on Facebook.
Cool.
I'm gonna go live here, and I think this should automatically go live on LinkedIn. I don't know. So let's just see whether that's the case. Anyway, we are live, so welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 46. Really
Yes.
delighted to be here. I'm in Santa Cruz, in California, mid California, seeing my good buddy Gordon and his family. And I'm delighted to be here. Quick shout out firstly to the people who are watching this on LinkedIn Live. Can you just quickly comment to make sure that you can hear me okay? Just say yes, I'm here, on comments. That would be awesome. And same again to the folks that are watching on Facebook. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me clearly. So just comment very quickly to say yes, yeah, you're here. And then we're going to be good. I assume everyone on Crowdcast can hear me fine, so that should be okay. All right. So I'm very excited today because we've got an amazing show lined up with a fantastic guest. We're very honored to have him on. But I'm even more excited about who my co-host is today. Because once again, not only Adam Gordon has been upgraded, but Stan Vasovich has been upgraded. We'd have Modiara Clamp from Amazon with us as the co-host. Mo, how are you?
I'm good.
We've lost her already.
Yeah, the connection should be all right. I hope you can hear me. So hi, my name is Modiara Kams. As Hong just said, I work for Amazon and I focus on talent attraction marketing in Europe. But I'm at the moment in San Francisco because I just visited the hiring success event. So amazing. I hope my connection keeps up.
Yeah, that
Is
was
this better?
amazing, wasn't it? We saw each other. I think your volume's a bit low there, actually, Mo. Do you mind find a way to turn that up? But yeah, that's right. I think Lee's saying the same. The volume's a bit too low, so you just pump it up and you'll be fine. Thanks, Lee. But yeah, we saw each other in Hiring Success earlier today, earlier this week, and it was an amazing event. So fantastic to be there and great to be this part of the world. We're rarely there. Lee, we're doing this show specifically for you, so we know you have to get up super early to watch this from when we broadcast in UK time. So thank you very much for being a soldier for us. Okay, before we get on with the show, first thing I've got to do is say a big shout out to our sponsors this week. Episode 46 is sponsored by our buddies at Uncubed. Uncubed are a fantastic organization that do recruiting for tech startups in Brooklyn, New York, East Coast. They also one of the few companies I think have done an amazing effort in combining community and content along with agency supply. They really are an example, I think, of an organization that's doing modern recruitment in the right way. Run by a friend of mine called Tarek Pertu, Liverpool supporter, really good dude. Check out Uncubed if you're hiring for tech over there. Okay, so we start the show as we always do, Mo, by looking at last week's Recruiting Brain Food. Did you read the newsletter? And if you did, what did you think was interesting in last week's issue?
Well, there are two things that basically stood out for me. One of them was the article around the world's largest working from home experiment. So I hope you can hear me better now.
Yep.
And it was due to the situation in China with the coronavirus, where everybody just had to instantly, change their way of working. And I think it's really interesting to see how that shift went. People jumping on WeChat and all the other platforms to have their meetings, extending their holidays. And, for myself, I work basically from wherever I want. So it's
Yeah.
kind of, interesting to see this huge, group of people trying to reinvent work in a forced way. But
46 million people were quarantined and still are quarantined, I think. So this is an entire problem. That's the size of a country. That's incredible. And when you think about, I think Wuhan, which is the center point of the outbreak, is actually a logistical center for a lot of the manufacturing that goes on in China. So suddenly all of these people can't show up to work. They're literally not allowed to do it. So how do you continue economically in some way? So I think this is going to have massive impact in the Chinese economy, because I suspect China and generally East Asian cultures are quite resistant to the concept of remote working. Very much it's a presenteeism type of culture, I believe. But this has forced it, and I think it will definitely change how Chinese companies operate. I think they'll see the advantages of doing remote once they've had this experiment. So yeah, do check out that Bloomberg essay. Super interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
What else was interesting for you last week, Mo?
Well, I'm always a big fan of following what's going on in tech space. So, for example, the HackerRank article/report that was in there was also really helpful for me. Yeah. I think, being at Amazon, we obviously hire tech people. Mm. So I think it's really important to understand what's going on and also how the tech space develops, because that helps you to communicate with your target group in a proper way, right? So it's really good to read. And also, having five generations on the work floor at the moment, which generation is behind which language or most embedded in a specific tech language. So I would definitely recommend that if you're in tech hiring, follow HackerRank. It's super helpful.
They do an amazing thing with their but how they present it, I think it makes it fantastically accessible as well. It's not one of these turgid PDFs that you've got to plow through 50 pages of whatever. But it's a really kind of interactive site. It shows you visually where the trends are, and it really gets you a feeling that you've got some insight on how these developers think and operate. So no question, if you do tech hiring, you need to check out the HackerRank report. I think you do need.
Oh, and I think we lost Tony. Hope that he reconnects. Let's wait for that. Okay, so I just heard that Hung is off, but he'll be back soon. As he was saying, it is really important to, make sure that you understand your target group, especially in the tech space. I've been in tech hiring for a few years, and one of the things that I found is that it's just how you communicate with the developers. They're not really attracted to a regular job description. We even experimented with sharing job descriptions in a tech language or code way of writing. I need to check what is going on. Give me a sec. Okay, so we will soon go over to get Chris on, who will talk about the report that he's written. He's the CEO from Appcast. And I think that would be good for us to wait for that. And I totally agree with David, but you're just sharing that, that nobody's really attracted to job descriptions in general. That's true. One of the things that I also think is really interesting is that if you look at job descriptions, it would be way better to describe them when they focus on the challenges that people will go through. And it's really, it's something that I'm just going through my mind right now, trying to improvise here, when I think that it would be interesting to write towards a performance-based job description instead of task-based, which is also challenging, but good. So I'm going to read the question from Lee. Thank you, Lee. So the question is, now that you have 9 whole months at Amazon, what have you learned? So one of the things that I've learned is that it's a really fast-paced environment, and you just need to keep up. But you also need to be flexible because the company is so big that everything is changing really quickly. So tomorrow we're going to go in to the left, and the day after we're going to go to the right. So it's just developing yourself and being fluid. That's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned. Overall, I'm having a great time. It's been amazing, actually. Thanks for asking. Gonna check with Hung if he's back online. Okay, so it seems that we have some connection problems. Hung and Chris. So I'm sorry, guys. I apologize for the technical inconvenience. Oh, Chris, there you are. How can I join? Okay, so one other question from Lee. Thank you. I think we're kind of...
Hey, guys. Chris Foreman, how are you?
Hey, Chris. It's great to have you online. I don't know what happened there. but good to have you on the show. Shall we wait for Hong for a few? Because he prepared, I think, questions around the report that you produced.
But yes, the very fancy AppCast benchmark report. In fact, this is the first time we are publicly talking about the results. So this is, like opening the envelope at the Academy Awards. Big deal on a Friday afternoon in recruitment marketing.
Awesome. So maybe you can start with introducing yourself, what you do, and maybe you can tell a bit more about AppCast while we'll wait for how.
Sure. So, as you can tell by the color of my hair, I've been doing this for a while. I'm 49 years old. Angela and I have four kids. We live in a little farm in northern New Hampshire. And the way I pay for the cows is I go to work and build recruitment technology companies. AppCast is the fourth company that myself and a bunch of friends have built over the years. The first one was a company called Ayers that built the first broadly adopted and commercially accepted recruitment CRM in the United States. We sold that to the largest RPO in the US at the time, a company called The Right Thing. And then a couple of years later, sold that company to ADP. And today, the technology that was our recruitment CRM and the outsourcing business, our ADP's outsourcing business, and also the technology behind ADP Recruiting Manager, their global enterprise ATS. After that, we started an incubator. We're headquartered right near Dartmouth College, which is one of the Ivy Leagues here in the United States. And so we've popped two companies out of the incubator, one, a job seeker focused platform called StartWire that allows job seekers to get updates on their job applications from about 10,000 companies. So endeavoring to close the black hole. And the other one is AppCast. And, the investment thesis behind AppCast, which we founded the business in 2014, is pretty simple. If you look outside the job space, in the online advertising world, basically every marketer uses technology and data to automate and optimize their online ad buying. But when we started the business in 2014, most, TA professionals were still buying, recruitment advertising on a duration basis. So a posting, I give you a bunch of money and I get my ad up for 30 days. And not only was that not horribly effective, as our industry started to move to pay for performance because of Indeed, kind of bringing the Google model to recruitment advertising, it became clear that there's a skill set that heretofore didn't exist in our space. And also people needed technology to kind of do what they do outside the job space to buy and optimize performance ads to, honestly, for Amazon to sell everything from toasters to tin pots, but for recruitment advertising. And so we did that. If you fast forward to today, we're 145 people. And this is all that we do. We have, our software manages $550 million of recruitment advertising spend per year. If you take a look at, most of the major job sites in the United States and Europe use our technology. All the gig companies in North America use our technology. 1,000 employers, every major ad agency for the most part. We have literally billions of job ad clicks being bought and optimized annually through the platform and hundreds of millions of job applications. And so the benchmark report, which I'm here to talk a little bit about, is it's kind of neat. It's aggregated and anonymized data from all that buying. So literally, thousands and thousands of companies their job ad buying is kind of included in the data set. And we've been publishing this for about 3-4 years now, and it gives us some really kind of interesting trend lines some interesting insight into what works and what doesn't.
So I'm also screened through the report. I think it was really interesting to see the insights. Some things that I took out of it is, that the low or the high unemployment rate, I should say, make the engagement more expensive, mobile applications, but also the time and days that people are applying for jobs and all those, nice key insights that I found. So really interesting. And you having all these insights based on the report, I would like to know, maybe you can tell me a bit more around the behavior of the, the job applicant in 2020.
So let's peel that onion a little bit. So when we talk about top applicants, we manage recruitment advertising from everything from the most top tier, software developers and physicians, scrub nurses, all the way down to folks that, pack boxes in distribution centers and put them on trucks and airplanes. And first off, I want to dispel this notion. Whenever people talk about the war for talent, at least in North America, which is where we most of our business is in North America, though we operate in 8 countries. And actually last July, we were acquired by the classifieds business of Axel Springer, a company called Stepstone. So if you're based out of London, Stepstone, they own Total Jobs, we operate in 54 countries. But most of our experience is in North America, at least from a NAPCAST standpoint. So first off is the war for talent. It's really hard to hire software developers in Silicon Valley and in Seattle and Union Square. But the real war for talent is truck drivers in the United States. It's people to pack boxes for the holidays in certain, kind of geos in the United States. It's filling call centers in North Dakota. The issue, we got caught up around, what is challenging and difficult in recruitment based on, watching, Silicon Valley on Netflix. The reality is supply and demand are out of balance throughout the economy at the high end and at the low end. And while this is counterintuitive, that's what drives recruitment advertising expense. Like what's the most expensive application to drive in the United States right now? truck drivers. Not nurses.
Surprising, actually.
Yeah. Honestly, some of the highest, cost per applications are also paid in October in major metro areas where major e-commerce and retail providers are competing for hourly employees to deal with the holiday rush. So dispelling this issue of, what's hard and what isn't hard and all that jazz is, it depends. It depends on the time of the year. It depends where you're at, and it can be anything. It literally can be anything. It's about supply and demand in the local geographies. So the first thing, though, that we've seen that's really kind of a key take-home point, and it's something valuable for TA leaders when they're going to talk to the CFO at their company and talking about why they actually need more money to do their job right now, is because the unemployment rate is so low in most of America, we are seeing a corollary. As the unemployment rate goes down, we are also seeing a decrease in apply rates. So what it means is job seekers are looking at more jobs and applying to fewer of them. And so why? Because they're picky. They can be. Yeah. It's like, there's lots of jobs for people right now. So how does this result in higher costs? Well, right now in the United States, recruitment advertising, depending on who you believe, is a $5 to $7 billion a year industry. And it is moving irrevocably and hard towards pay for performance ad models. So rather than paying $300 for a posting, you pay 50 cents a click. So if in fact the apply rate is going down, what that means at a very basic level is you need more clicks to get an apply. And if you're paying per click, that means your costs go up. And so there's actually really easy math to do that says, hey, we operate in 10 markets, whatever your business happens to be. The unemployment rate is going down in those areas. We've been able to track using our applicant tracking system or even just our benchmark data that, it's taken more clicks to actually get an apply. And, the costs of a click are staying the same. And that's also something that shows the average cost of a click in the United States to buy a job seeker across all functions, all geographies, ticked up one penny from 70 cents to 71 cents. What it actually means is you need 10 to 15% more in your budget just to get the same number of applicants to fill your funnel at a macro level.
Conclusion. I think one of the things that keeps me wondering, if you say these things, is like, what if I don't have that budget? And also, how do I then actually know when my ad is working well?
So first off, if in fact you've got limited budget, the most important thing that you can do to stretch your budget, and actually, candidly, I believe, and it's difficult to get data to prove this, but I believe to actually get better quality candidates, is to shorten your apply process, make it easier. All right. Mm-hmm. So right now in the United States, on average, for companies that are enterprise organizations that have more than 1,000 employees and use an applicant tracking system, the average click-to-apply rate or apply rate on an applicant tracking system is about 7%. The range, though, literally can go from 0.25%. So think about that. You need 400 people starting an application to get one. That's goofy. All the way up to 25 to 30%. And so, again, if you're paying per click, how do you get more juice from the orange? Well, the first thing is to absolutely focus on the apply flow, and to make it easier for good quality candidates to throw their hat in the ring. Second thing is there's a bunch of the data in the report says that it's kind of interesting things. You can get a 20% higher apply rate. Not like clicking on the jobs at Indeed or Glassdoor, but a 20% higher apply rate once somebody clicks on the job by having a title that has one to three words in it versus 7 to 12. So think about that. So forget about all your fancy marketing degrees. Okay. Just call the job what it is. Truck driver, right? CDL license. Instead of saying sandwich artist, you know, come up with some, you know, sandwich maker. It's something that there is a tremendous amount of data now. I mean, just this year's report was based on a couple hundred million clicks and about 7 million job applications. And, you know, where if you have an easy apply process, you actually, you know, describe the job efficiently and clearly, both in the title and then job description, you could, without being hyperbolic, decrease your recruiting costs, you know, the amount of money that you spend to generate an applicant by 50%. Like just boom. Still advertise the same places, do the same thing, just do it better. And all of a sudden, it just performs better. The other, you know, and then, you know, you get into some of the stuff that the, you know, I went to computer camp when I was in 10th grade. So, you know, this is the type of guy that I am, you know, super geeky. If you advertise jobs in the last 10 days of the month, the competition within the job indexes in the United States is materially less than in the first 20 days of the month. So what's interesting is there's big companies, especially those that use ad agencies, they create a monthly budget for a campaign. So, you know, you work for Amazon, you've got, you know, warehouse supervisors, or you've got marketing managers, and you've got a recruitment advertising campaign. You say, I'm going to spend $10,000 on all the jobs that we have open for those. So what ends up happening is as that money gets spent, okay, when the budget gets tapped, all of a sudden, no one's advertising those jobs anymore. And a lot of advertising budgets are hit between the 20th and the 25th of the month. So between the 20th and the 30th of the month, the marketplace becomes materially less competitive. Job seekers are still there in the same volume, but the number of ads in the marketplace is lower. So your prices go down because it's an auction. And secondarily, you actually see higher performance. You get more people applying for your jobs. Now, you can't go and tell that to a hiring manager, say, oh, wait, you know, hey, Becky, let's just hold off until the 21st of the month. I mean, she would throw something at you that would be very heavy and very bad.
How are you going to ask them to postpone, you know, the role that they need to fill? How are you going to, you know, what would be your advice in that?
Well, it depends. You clearly can't do it for a high-level individual contributor, like you know, a role that you would apply for or I would apply for. But if you want to think about efficiency in terms of recruitment advertising, you're recruiting for, let's say, a warehouse worker all the time, right? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, always need them. In that case, there's an argument to say that you would bid less days 20 to 30 because it's less competitive. There's more job seekers. You would be able to pick up you know, the type of performance that you got later in the month at a lower, you know, kind of normalized price per application, and be able to invest more of that in the beginning part of the month where it's actually more competitive. So it's kind of the recruitment advertising version of dollar cost averaging when you're investing. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes stock goes up, sometimes it goes down, just keep buying. And in that case, the overall cost goes down of your investment.
And is this something that you could do with AppGaps?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about software. And, you know, it's not just us. There's lots of people who make software. I personally think that ours is awesome. We have an incredible team that, you know, just is always endeavoring to figure out new ways to find insight and data and bring that to our ad buyers. But, you know, what software is good at is processing data and executing on, you know, logic that you give it. And so, you know, this idea that if you can show, so here's, you know, where's the graph? So here's the graph that basically shows demand, advertiser activity, and job seeker activity. And in the beginning of the month, they're in a negative relationship between employer activity and seeker activity. And at the end of the month, it flips. Okay, software can recognize that. Software, you can say, hey, save us some money towards the end of the month, reinvest it elsewhere. That's what it's good for.
Okay, you know, yeah, I really like, you know, the analysis that you make, but I have one question, maybe a cheeky one. So I, you know, with my European experience in recruitment marketing campaigns, we still have some areas where there's more connection with offline advertising. Mm-hmm. I always think that's kind of a funnel, you know, you go from offline to online, maybe, you know, drive people to that moment where they apply. Do you have any data or insights on that in the report or in general? What's your vision?
No, I mean, you know, this is what we are specifically looking at is data from performance marketplaces in North America. You know, Europe is a first off, Europe is not one entity. So if you take a look at recruitment, if you look at recruitment advertising in the UK, it is radically different than recruitment advertising in Germany, very different than in the Netherlands, and totally different than in Poland. And so the markets, so the Netherlands and the UK are moving at pace towards more of a marketplace type of environment like the United States. So you have a proliferation of providers, it becomes more performance, you know, ad buying, the characteristics of job seeker behavior are more similar. The characteristics of employers or advertisers is similar. When you get into, you know, France, you get into Germany, you get into Poland, you know, Pracuy in Poland, Stepstone in Germany, Figueroa in France, all, you know, have different models. You know, so they spend a lot of time working with their their employers, spend a lot of time making sure that the ads are 5x5, really well designed. You know, they tend to have higher costs associated with it. The value that their customers get, though, is exceptional. You know, it's like one of the things that's kind of interesting is that everyone says, oh, you need to pay for performance to get good value. That's, to use a technical term, it's crap. I mean, at the end of the day, how you pay for something is disassociated to the value that you get. And in these different markets, they have different models and everything is unique. But when you've got two big international players like LinkedIn and Indeed kind of playing globally, it does upend the apple cart. Is offline important? More and more, less so. You know, online, you know, user-generated content, reviews, very important. Salary research, very important. The ability to learn about a job, you know, very, and a company, very, very important. You know, is there a role for, you know, brand advertising offline, you know, kind of outside type stuff or in print? Sure. You know, absolutely. I mean, that's what marketers do. You test stuff and you figure it out. If you're doing a major launch, if you're in a very hard to fill location, of course. But in my opinion, it's becoming less so. But what is interesting is that everybody in this space is moving what I call down funnel. So like, if you take a look at Indeed, some of the smartest people in the world doing this job. Okay. I mean, you know, Chris Himes and the team at Indeed are just scary smart, and they sell pay-per-click. They sell cost per application. They sell some version of quality cost per application, and their hire product, they're actually selling hires. So think about that. Think about the transition that's occurring in recruitment advertising, you know, in the United States, where we're not even done with the move to pay-per-click. And already, you know, the market leader is in many markets selling recruitment advertising as a turnkey service that's actually a recruiting service. Is that going to be something that's going to happen and will leapfrog into Europe? Absolutely.
I think it's an interesting shift. That's something that I see as well. But one of the things, you know, from a really practical point of view that I'm always having discussions about internally is that what kind of influence do you have if you advertise on the actual hire? I mean, you know, that you know what I'm talking about, the add to hire ratio. You know, once a candidate clicks on apply, you can't really influence that anymore if you only focus on advertising, obviously.
Well, that's why they're packaging value-added services with it. You know, so it's not just you're paying for the advertising on an apply. It's basically a recruiting service, but they have an advantage because they verticalize the supply chain, right? So if you take a look at Amazon Basics, it's probably similar. All right. So you've got a customer. The customer wants something. You've got the data to understand what they want, and you've got the supply chain to go build it and deliver it to them. If in fact you think that the supply chain starts with the seeker, and you can make market with the seeker database that you have and the seekers that you have, then arguably you would have a disruptive cost advantage if you could package those, you know, vertically. And so, like, if you take a look at staffing firms, you know, especially in the UK in the agency world, you know. If you go out and talk to some folks in the job board space and, you know, buy them a beer, you know, maybe two, they might actually start to say, you know, hey, we kind of feel like we're being arbitraged by staffing firms. We get the job seeker, we deliver the job seeker to staffing firms. They turn around and basically do a little bit and then deliver them. And they're taking a lot of the value creation in the space. Is that fair? No. I mean, there's a lot of hard work to be done. Is it a rational perspective? Sure. And you know, at the end of the day, if you can verticalize, you know, that supply chain and become to an employer their, you know, true talent provider, that's a big deal. And honestly, one of the most expensive things you can do that you need to do in recruitment is get the seeker eyeballs. And if you got them, that's an advantage.
So, you know, based on what you're saying right now, you can basically say that talent attraction and talent acquisition will merge, you know, that they will be a wholesome process in the future. So what do you think that will do with, you know, job advertising in general? I mean, do you think that all the platforms will go into this value-based company?
I'm 49. I plan on being absolutely retired by the time that comes to bear. I have, you know, I don't know. One of the things that I've learned over my career is that change does come to talent acquisition, but change comes slowly. It isn't a sharp turn in the road. You can see the curve coming, and the best companies know that the curve is going to come, and they change, you know, what they do, and they adapt to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Always. But one of the things that I found interesting in general, and I think that's something that Hung also wanted to ask, is what do you think about, you know, Google and Facebook and, yeah, also Amazon working on these more HR tech related tools?
Well,
everything is developing something else, right? Like Google Jobs, I guess it's like Facebook Workplace.
Yeah. You know, if it is not a secret that the vast majority of job search starts at a Google, you know, a job seeker search start at the Google search bar. Mm-hmm. Okay. It is not a secret that, you know, Facebook has a massive amount of intent data on their members, and there are trigger events that are relatively easy to discern if you know what you're looking for, to understand when somebody wants to actually look at an opportunity. They are more uniquely positioned to do that than anyone in the world. The jobs classifieds business, there's, you know, I always get this wrong. There's four or five major classifieds. There's travel, there's autos, there's real estate, jobs, junk, you know, Craigslist type stuff. And so, it's a massive business, right?
Yeah.
It's a massive business. So the idea that one of the five major categories of classifieds globally, which is a massive profitable business in the online world, like classifieds pay for a lot of stuff that occurs online, that Facebook and Google would not decide at some point to play in that in some way, shape, or form is illogical. So again, for those of us with, you know, gray hair, we've just been waiting for this to happen and trying to figure out how it's going to occur. You know, Amazon, I Every time I think I understand Amazon, I recognize that it's kind of like trying to understand the universe at a particular level. It expands, and sure. You know, there's entropy involved. So I can't really comment on Amazon's play in that area, but I think it's incredibly logical that Google and Facebook are doing what they do.
Yeah, totally. So we totally got, I would love to know a bit more about your report as well. So, you know, let's say you don't have time to go through the whole report. What would be the five maybe key things that you would, you know, that you could share with us in this, you know,
recruitment advertising is becoming more expensive because the labor market is imbalanced between supply and demand. Number one. Number two is more and more people are continuing to look for jobs on mobile devices. And if you want to make it easy for job seekers to engage with you, you need to have a simple, easy, and practical mobile experience. Three, you should write your job ads using the AP style guide for journalists. So, you know, I Google it. You know, I my first job out of college, I was a journalist. And, you know, there's, when you read a newspaper, a lot of people can read a newspaper, right? It's simple language. It's easy to understand, yeah. You know, who, what, when, where, why, not a lot of big words, explain it, you know, tell the story, but make sure that the everyday person can understand it. That's what a job ad should be. The reality is that when you describe things succinctly and describe a job well, it actually improves the efficacy of the money that you're spending. Okay, so job ads are becoming more expensive. more people are on mobile. Make sure it works. Make sure that your language is clean and easy to understand. Have a short apply process. And
yeah, well, to be honest, this is one of the things that you just mentioned this earlier, but this is one of the things that I'm always in discussion about, because if you make the apply process shorter and you would basically say, I make it easy, you can apply via your mobile, you just leave your name, phone number, and email address, and we'll reach out to you. You know, that also causes a lot of work for the recruitment teams or...
But that's what software is good at.
That's in agency.
Right. So let me give you a for instance. You've got Katie. Katie is an unbelievable talent. Choose whatever, you know, function you have. She goes to work on Thursday and has what I call a beet farmer day. A beet farmer day is when she is driving home and she calls her wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, mom, dad, aunt, uncle, eldest daughter, you name it, and says some derivative of the following. That place is such a clown show, I'm never going back. I would rather be a beet farmer than go to work tomorrow morning. All right?
Okay.
So she goes home, and if it's anything like the Foreman Tom's household, you know, got kids and hockey and cows to milk and all sorts of craziness going on. And you got to get dinner on the table. So I get home, or Katie gets home, you know, starts cooking dinner, opens a bottle of wine, pours a glass of wine. And says, God, that was just what a bunch of knuckleheads. And is making pasta tonight and throws pasta in the water. And it's going to be done in 8 minutes. Tick, 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 tick. And she says, oh, all right, well, has another sip of wine, sits down and says, you know what? I am going to look for a job. And she goes to whatever job site that she, you know, uses, or she goes to Facebook or Google, and she finds incredibly a perfect job, 5 minutes closer to home, exactly what she wants, company with a 4.9 Glassdoor rating, everything that you want. Tick, 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 tick. She then has the opportunity to, she clicks on the apply button and she runs into one of two things. One of them is a 17-minute apply process, that has an assessment in it.
We've all been there.
or she has the ability to throw her hat in the ring, which is what you talked about. Tick, 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 tick. Pasta's done. Dog starts to bark. Everything's lost. The next morning, because everything's better in the morning and she is going to go back to work, one of two things will happen. As she's driving to work, either she's going to get to work and probably the craziness will pass and she'll get back into the swing of things, or a recruiter calls her on her way to work and says, "Hey, Katie, I saw your application. You look fantastic. Can we talk to you this afternoon?" Mm-hmm. The best candidates are not the ones that suffer through that. The best candidates have options. So if I have a choice between making it easy for a bunch of people to throw their hat in the ring and then writing software to say, okay, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, and make it easier on recruiters, that's the right answer. The wrong answer is to make it really, really hard for Katie to take the next step in her career when she's had an awful experience that day, when she is the most likely to actually come work for your company.
Yeah, totally aligned with that, I think. Yeah, especially in the passive candidate market, it's totally candidate driven. You should, adjust your recruitment process. But still, I'm convinced that it's really hard for people to make that process. Is there anything in your report around how you can change this application process, or any data that might be relevant in changing that?
There's a bunch of information in there that shows the longer you make the apply process, the lower the apply rate goes. So if it's short, more people apply. And if it's long, less people do. And quite candidly, that's about as sophisticated as it gets. You need to ask the questions that you need to ask. All right. But you shouldn't ask anything more. And when, the good idea fairy shows up, somebody says, "Oh, wouldn't it be great if we asked this question in the application?" No, go away. All right. You can ask that after they apply. If they come in for an interview, we'll ask that question, but no. And the reason why we have these god-awful long application processes is well-intentioned people that are like, "Well, let's gather all this information so we can feed it into our ERP system, if we hire this person." That's dumb. You shouldn't ask anything that you don't need. So if the only thing that you need is a resume, first name, last name, email address, and mobile phone number, that is it. And then if you like, Katie, if you like Sally, if you like, Ishmael, then far out. They'll fill out the full application down the road because they're going to like the job and it's going to work out.
From my experience and what I see, in Amazon, is that totally works if you speak about the gig economy related jobs, right? Like temporary workers, as you said in the beginning. So that would be a good option. Are there, speaking about gig economy, I'm also thinking here, are there any differences, like major differences between, let's say a temporary worker versus a permanent employee?
There's lots of deltas in. We could have another 5-day webinar on that one. But from a practical standpoint, is there that much of a difference in terms of beginning the relationship with them? No. You need to find somebody that has the skills or capabilities that you're looking for and is seeking the employment type that you can offer. That's marketing. I don't really see why you have a different, you should make it easy for everybody. You should use software to make it efficient for your recruiters, and you should focus on trying to get the best people in the door no matter what, whether they're, driving a trolley or are going to be, you're hiring for a CFO position.
Sorry, I went to check in the comments because there's happening a lot. I'm looking at Lee. I don't know if you see this as well, but he says, "For some reason, I tend to believe that most TA people who recruit for large companies all come from Wyoming because they all have." Sorry, guys. So I was also looking at the time and wanted to give the listeners an option to ask questions while we chat. Just please feel free to ask some questions when we're in this space, and we'll save some at the end. great report. What else would be interesting to know? Because you basically, I asked for five things and you came up with three. So do you have anything else that,
four.
That we can learn?
No, I could make something up for the fifth one, but it's
no, don't do it.
Those four things.
Okay, cool. And, so Hung is asking a question. Hi, Hung. Great that you're in the chat room. So his question is, what's the one thing ad buyers should be doing after looking at the AppCast report?
Well, besides buying our products, oh gosh, I don't know. Here's the one thing that gonna sound dumb. It's so simple. But if you do it, and this is outside of optimizing your apply flow and all that, you're going to dramatically improve your ROI. Know when to stop spending. Mm-hmm. It's marketing 101. Like, you want to improve your marketing outcomes, like 30%, stop at the right time. And what I mean by that, in a pay-for-performance ad environment, you only want to acquire what you need to hit your objective. So if you have a job or a handful of jobs and one of them gets 1,000 applications and the other 10 in the campaign don't have any or have five, the one that's getting 1,000 most likely is a very popular job and you really don't need to spend any more money on that. You should stop spending money on it, because if you stop spending money on that, your budget's going to get reallocated to driving more applies and clicks on the other jobs. And I can't tell you how often that happens. So 6% of jobs get over 43% of applications.
Okay. Yeah.
Porridge too hot. 49% of jobs get less than 5% of applications. Porridge too cold. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, honestly, for the 6%, you should be probably getting about 6% of applications on 6% of jobs. And after you get enough applications, you should go ahead and you should stop spending on it. You can do that with a spreadsheet. You can do that with a person. You can do that with our software. You can do that a whole variety of ways, but just stop spending. When you get enough.
I totally agree. I think that that's also connecting, especially with the audience that you're targeting to. You know, you have these situations where you're just like seeing these ads and they're pushed and pushed and pushed, and you get this audience fatigue at the end. Great tip. Any other final thoughts that you want to share?
No. Everybody should vote. if you're in a country that's having an election, everybody should go vote. That's all. Okay, that's all I'm gonna say. Just go vote.
Okay,
make the world better.
Well, nice. Well, thank you for jumping in the call or in the live stream with me. Unfortunately, Hung couldn't be here. But it was amazing.
Yeah. Thanks, Mo. It was great to meet you. Thanks, Hung.
And have a great weekend, and thanks everybody for watching.
Yep. Ciao. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.